Daniel chapter 11 is where we are. Does everybody have the most recent notes? We only printed a few pages of those. So, I get to Daniel. I keep bebopping from Ezekiel to Hosea. There's something in between there. It's called Daniel. So if you don't have those, everybody have the sheet that I'm talking about? It goes back to back. So it should go, the sheet should go, Brad is in the back. It should go all the way to verse 45. So we didn't want to print all the sheets, but the one that we're working on, the back sheet should say 45. If you have that one, you have the one I'm on. Okay? Yeah, we're in chapter 11, but we're down to, we're about verse 28. Okay, so we're on the front side of the last sheet. And if you want the whole study, the first, on Daniel 11, the first pages, the first five or six pages are back there on the back. You can stick them together and stick a staple in them, and you would have the whole study. I just didn't want to go through the process. It's like 8 pages or 9 pages. I'm trying to save us pennies. When we save pennies, God gives us dollars. That's how I look at it. So, okay, so we're in Daniel 11, verse 28. So, what we saw in verse 28 was, remember I shared with you the story, and we're going to see it again later on, but the Antiochus Epiphanes, that's the type of the Antichrist, the Greek ruler. He comes down to Egypt, and he's trying to take over Egypt, and the Romans stop him. The Romans don't want him to have control over their food supply. It's like a lot of nations don't want the Russians to have control of Ukraine, because Ukraine is their food supply. Right? So the Romans, their food supply was largely the Nile River Valley, and they exported. And as the Romans expanded, they didn't want the Greeks from Syria, the Seleucid Empire, to control the Ptolemies, the Cleopatra Ptolemies. And so they sent their army, their general, gives Antiochus a warning. So, verse 28 is where we stopped, I believe. And it says, while returning to his land, this is Antiochus Epiphanes, with great riches. So Antiochus is allowed to basically pillage Egypt. And remember, over half the world's ancient gold came from the Nile River Valley south of Egypt. The gold mines of the ancient world were south of Egypt, down the Nile. So the one reason Egypt, with their pharaohs, had literally hundreds of pounds of gold in those pyramids, in the Valley of the Kings, down in Luxor, where they later stages buried them, was because they owned the gold mines of half the ancient world. So gold was cheap, literally, in Egypt. So that's why the invading armies would come and pillage the pharaoh's tombs and things like that. So he takes this gold back, and this is the prophecy. Of course, Daniel is prophesying in 530, and these events won't take place for another 300 plus years. So Daniel is looking forward, and the prophecies are very specific. But it says, his heart shall be moved against the Holy Covenant. So this literally took place. Antiochus Epiphanes comes back from Egypt with all this plunder, and now he's going to hate on the Jews. So if we look in my notes, it says Antiochus again attacks Egypt, but it must be opposed. I fat fingered a word there, by Rome's navy. So Rome's navy comes from the coastlands. So if we look at verse 28, he's going to be there's going to come from the south. Notice verse 30. It says, for ships from Cyprus shall come against him, therefore he shall be grieved. We think of Cyprus as the island, except the Romans had a navy base, and it was known as the coastlands. There's a disagreement about what the Hebrew word here is. And the coastlands are places of navy bases, can be translated that way as well. So this is that story that I told you last week. We read, at that appointed time, he shall return and go toward the south, but it shall not be like the former or the latter, for the ships from Cyprus shall come against him. That's the Roman navy that I told you about last week. Therefore, he shall be grieved and return in rage against the Holy Covenant. That's the same Holy Covenant in verse 28. So he's starting to get angry at the Jews because he's being frustrated by the Romans. So if you read, I told you in my notes, verse 28, the Roman general draws a circle in the sand. Remember me telling you that story last week? He draws a circle in the sand around Antiochus because Antiochus says, when the Roman general comes with a few ships and says, if you stay here, the entire Roman navy and the Roman army is going to come. He had been a captive in Rome as a child. He knew the might and power of Rome, Antiochus does. So he says, give me time and I'll think about it. Well, the Roman general doesn't want to give him time because he knows Antiochus will go back to Syria, raise a massive army, and he doesn't want to give him time. He draws a circle in the sand around Antiochus and says, before you step out of that circle, that is the intimidation and the might and the power of Rome. Before you step out of that circle, you give me your answer. Well, Antiochus at the time had an army. The Roman general has a few ships in himself, but Antiochus knew that this Roman general represented the might of Rome. Antiochus, as it says here, returns a verse 30, and returns in rage against the Holy Covenant and do damage. So this is going to lead us into the story of Hanukkah and how we get the Maccabees and how we get Hanukkah. Okay? So this is the fulfillment. Let's see. He turns from Egypt in a rage. I'm in my notes. The corrupt Jewish high priest. So I'm in that verses 28 to 30 section. The corrupt Jewish high priest who had assented to the horrific slaughter of the Jews and had bribed Antiochus is Menelaus. Remember I told you there was a high priest and then there was that younger guy in the high priestly family that bribes Antiochus and he becomes the high priest. And then there's another guy that bribes and he becomes the high priest and they kill the first high priest. And so the Jews are upset and they send a delegation to Antioch to appeal to Antiochus, and Antiochus then kills that delegation because he's getting money. And now he's having to pay a huge debt off to Rome for losing these wars. He's having to pay money for losing the wars. So he's now trying to gather more gold and all these things, and the Jewish high priests are bribing him. So, as I told you before, this is where it starts, the bribing of the civil authorities. So no longer from this point forward is it the rightly genetic line of the high priests. In the Old Testament, if you go back, there is a son of Aaron, and that's supposed to be the line of the high priest. Remember that? This is the point right here where that stops. So when you get to the time of Christ, Caiaphas, Annas, all those people are bribing the Romans. It started with the Greeks. And they're bribing the Romans to be the high priest. They are not in the right line. That line of priests actually was dispossessed, and they moved to Alexandria, Egypt, and built a temple, a Jewish temple in Alexandria, Egypt, that lasted for hundreds of years. When Christ is there, the temple worship is being done by the wrong Levitical line. And the way they're in power is by bribing. So you can see why Christ says, you are false shepherds. They were not the right shepherds. Not only because of their action, but because they had bribed their way into leadership and they had dispossessed the rightful heirs of the chief priests and the high priest position. Okay? Any comment or question about that? No, I knew you were going to ask me that, and I don't remember. I don't remember the son's name. Which of Aaron's son is it? I will look that up and I will get back to you. But I don't remember the son. There's four sons, and two of them are killed for putting false fire on the altar. And then there's two other sons, and it's one of the other sons that is supposed to be in the line of the chief priest. And that line stays, there's a chief priest through the Babylonian captivity. That line stays pure, if I can use that term, except it blips out here with the Greeks bribing. So let me get, I'll thank you for the question. I hesitate to get off of my notes, which I just did, because if I don't have all the answers to the questions in the top of my head, then I get a question like that. And I will not tell you something that I don't know if it's true or not. So let me go back and I'll get you that information. Thank you, Gene, for embarrassing your pastor with a question I don't know. So, no, I'm teasing with you. I'm glad you asked the question. No. It's not in my notes. I just remember it from history. But thank you. I will go back. Yeah, Ken? Yes, it was. I'll be honest with you. I didn't know this until I read a book about a year ago, The Life and Times of Jesus of Nazareth by Joachim Jeremias. And then he wrote another book, The Temple and Culture in the Time of Christ. And he was a converted Jew. And he wrote this whole history. What's kind of got me into is a couple of his books and a couple of others of the Maccabee period and the intertestamental period that honestly is not, there are so many things you learn in seminary. This timeline of history is not something that I've really studied until the last couple of years myself, to be honest with you. So if you're sitting there going, wow, I never heard all this stuff before, neither had I. So, okay. I mean, we normally study the gospel period. We study Moses, the Exodus, David, right? Right? And if it's not in the Bible, well, we don't study it. And I understand that. But Daniel's prophecies are about this time period. And this is the time period that sets up the culture of Jesus. So if you don't understand the culture in which Jesus is walking and living, you don't understand some of the questions that are being asked and what he's dealing with. Why does he come in with a rope and a whip and says twice at the beginning of his ministry and during Passion Week at the end of his ministry, you know, this is supposed to be a house of prayer and you've turned it into a snake den of robbers? Why does he call the leaders, you whited sepulchers? You are beautiful on the outside, but you're full of dead men's bones. Why? Because they're bribing their way into leadership. It's almost like America today, pay to play, right? But I will come back for that answer to you, Gene, and thank you for asking the question. No, I would rather I would rather not know some. Yep. Nope. It's a good, I ought to have those names in my head. I should have those names in my head. I do know that in 1066, England was conquered by the French. So I do know that, the Battle of Hastings. I don't know where my keys are, but I do know that. My wife always says to me, she goes, you know more useless history trivia, but you can't find your wallet. There's truth to that. What's that? That's exactly right. That's what I say. Well, you would be out of a job if I knew where my wallet was. So, Kara, don't listen to that. That is not the role of the wife, is to find the wallet of the husband. But it's sometimes, ladies, how many of you find your wife's wallet from time to time? Anybody else willing to? Oh, come on, ladies, help me out here. What's that? How do you find your wife's wallet? Well, at the back step going up into our house from our garage is a mat, you know, to wipe your shoes on. And it says phone, wallet, keys. My wife bought that so I can always, when I step off, oh, do I have my phone, wallet? Do I have everything? Yeah. Oh, well, we all have our weaknesses. So we see in verse 29, at the appointed time he shall return and go toward the south, this is Antiochus Epiphanes, but it shall not be like the former, for this Roman general, the ships from Cyprus, shall come against him. And I keep going back and saying, this is a prophecy that is 300 years in the future from when Daniel is writing Daniel 11, more specific prophecies in this chapter than any other chapter in all of the Bible. I mean, Daniel is very specific. And therefore he shall be grieved and return against, enrage against the Holy Covenant and do damage. So he should return and show regard for those who forsake the Holy Covenant. Oh, so he's going to side with the bad guy Jews. He's going to side, Antiochus is going to come back after being defeated by the Romans, and he's going to side with the bad guy Jews, the Jews that are usurping. And that's exactly what takes place. The high priest, I'm in my notes, who had assented to the horrific slaughter of the Jews. Remember, he had killed 80,000. Antiochus previously had killed 80,000 men, women, and children. The high priest, this Menelaus, had assented to that because he was on Antiochus' side. And he had assented to that. So he bribes Antiochus. And this is the fulfillment of verse 30. The quote there is, show regard for those who forsook the covenant. So here you have the chief priest assenting to the slaughter of 80,000 Jews. Also, he could be in power and have riches and authority. And he's supposed to be the representative of Yahweh for the Jewish people. And Daniel specifically prophesies that hundreds of years before it takes place. So skip down to verse 31. He says, and forces shall be mustered by him, and they shall defile the sanctuary fortress. This is now where we're getting to him being the type of the Antichrist. Remember, the type comes first. The anti-type comes later. Okay? And then they shall take away the daily sacrifices. The Antichrist is going to do the same thing during Daniel's 70th week, during the tribulation. And place there an abomination of desolation. Do you remember in Matthew 24 and 25, we'll get there. This phrase is key. Jesus says, when they say, when is your coming? And he says, when you see the abomination of desolation. He quotes this verse. Because it had happened in their history 180 years before. And it was known as the abomination of desolation because Daniel had prophesied it looking forward 300 plus years. It happens by Antiochus Epiphanes. Now Jesus is looking back about 190 years and says, when you see that same thing happening in the future, look up, your redemption draws nigh. So you got to put yourself in the disciples' shoes and understand their history so you understand what Jesus is talking about. Okay? The abomination of desolation. So go into my notes. Antiochus sends his generals against Jerusalem on the Sabbath. Remember, the Jews aren't allowed to do work on the Sabbath. He knows that. So he just is going to slaughter them on the Sabbath. And he kills the men and takes the women and children as slaves in an attempt to turn the Jews into Greeks. He's going to take them just like they did with Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, to turn them into Babylonians. Just like the Russians are taking the Ukrainian children to turn them into Russians. This has been going on for thousands and thousands, kidnapping children to turn them into you. This has always happened. He stops the sacrifices and builds a Greek gymnasium in Jerusalem. Greeks worked out in the nude. They did the Olympic Games in the nude. How that all started was way back, hundreds of years before this. There was a woman who got into the Olympic Games and beat all the men. And they found out later she was a woman. So they said, okay, enough with that. We're not going to let women beat us. So now all the Greek games were done without clothes on. So the races were done without clothes. Everything, the wrestling was done without clothes. So now you have nudity in Jerusalem. Can you imagine how offensive this was to the Jews? Can you imagine how offensive this was? So he desecrates the temple and places the abomination of desolation. Places there the abomination. This was a statue of Jupiter or Zeus Olympius. So this was a statue to the Greeks' biggest god. They take out the Ark of the Covenant. They take out the mercy seat. And in its place, they put a statue of the Greek god. Okay? The temple itself was renamed the Temple of Zeus Olympius. This same type of desecration in the temple happened during Ahaz's reign and Manasseh, if you go back and look at those texts. The Benedict Arnold Jews, that's Menelaus, I use our term Benedict Arnold Jews, attempt to disguise their circumcision because they have to be in the Greek gymnasium. Are you tracking with me? So they're circumcised, the Greeks are not. It becomes pretty apparent who's a Jew and who isn't. So the Greeks, the Benedict Arnold Quisling Jews, attempt to disguise their circumcision so they can exercise in the gymnasium and integrate themselves as secular. It's a lot like secular Jews today. You know, your Orthodox Jews, your conservative Jews are pro-life. They're against abortion. They're against transgenderism, all those kind of things. It's your secular Jews, isn't it? In America today, that are strongest proponents of murdering in the womb. Nothing. Well, yes, but that's that part of my point is the transgenderism. That's your secular Jews today. It's the same. It's the exact same division. It's the exact same division. I have a lot of unbelieving but very conservative Orthodox Jewish rabbi friends, and they are appalled at what the secular Jews do. They are appalled. Yeah. Because Jewish tradition values life supremely, in the womb, out of the womb. Jewish life value, I mean, traditional Jewish values are, they value life. So, yes. It's just like Protestant churches today that are extremely liberal. But if, I mean, John Knox is rolling over in his grave. I'm Scots-Irish. And my pedigree is Presbyterian, and John Knox is rolling over in his grave. That's on one side of my family. The other side of my family was Methodist, and John Wesley is rolling over in his grave. They are. So let me jump back into my notes. I'm on verses 30, 31 to 35. So they aligned themselves with the pagan Greeks against their fellow Jews. The Greeks, as I've already mentioned, exercised in the nude, and the Jews attempted to hide their circumcision to be accepted by the Greeks. So look at verse 33. We're in Daniel 11. So look at verse 33. And those of the people who understand shall instruct many. So in verse 33, Daniel 11, and the people who understand shall instruct many. Oh, those are the good guy Jews. Not the ones following the chief priest who's bribing his way into power. How accurate Daniel predicts this is just when you're thinking he's doing this in 530 and this is going to happen in 168, 175. Yet for many days they shall fall by sword and flame, by captivity and plunder. So we see in verse 33 a prophecy of the Maccabees. Daniel prophesies the rise of the Maccabees. A priest by the name of Matthias lived in a small town. I don't know how to pronounce his name. So I always say you know a well-read person when they don't know how to pronounce names. Because they never sat in a class where they were taught how to pronounce names, but they read a lot. So they go, I don't know how to pronounce it, but I know his whole story. He lived in a small town outside of Jerusalem. He had five valiant sons. Today, if you go to Israel, their version of the Olympic Games are called the Maccabean Games. This is the last time until 47, 48, the Maccabeans are the last time there is a Jewish nation in Israel. And the Romans are going to stop that in 61 BC, you know, roughly 60 years before Jesus is born. Okay? So a priest by the name of Matthias lived in a small town outside of Jerusalem. They fulfilled verses 32 and 33. So it says, those who do wickedly against the covenant, he shall corrupt with flattery, but the people who know their God shall be strong and carry out great exploits. The story of the Maccabees is a phenomenal story of freedom, fighting small armies against huge armies and winning battle after battle. I mean, it is exactly this prophecy. And those are the people who understand shall instruct many, yet for many days they shall fall by sword and flame, by captivity and plundering. Now when they fall, they shall be aided with a little help, but many shall join with them by intrigue. And some of those of understanding, those are the good guy Jews, shall fall to refine them, purify them, and make them white until the time of the end, because it is still for the appointed time. In other words, the period of the Maccabees and Antiochus, it's still for the appointed time. They are types. They are types of what's going to happen to the Jews during the tribulation, which is the antitype. They are types of what the Antichrist is going to do, because the Antichrist is the antitype. So remember this section of Daniel 11 when we get to Matthew 24 and 25, because Jesus is going to be referring to this as, well, when will be the sign of your coming? And when will these things be? Because Jesus tells them every stone of the temple is going to come down. They're like, Jesus, look at the temple. It's Passion Week, right? Look, a son of Esau, Herod the Idumean. Herod of Esau, Idumean. Esau's son built you a temple. Jesus, son of Jacob, take the temple. You're the Messiah. And he goes, eh. Not one stone is going to be left on another. And they're like, mind blown. Mind blown. Well, what will be the sign of your coming? And when will these things be? And he's going to refer to Daniel 11 as the type. Okay? So, they fulfill verses 32 and 33. Years later, the followers of the Maccabees would become the Pharisees of Christ's day. So what starts out as a great, great, great revival of Jewish goodness, within 150 years becomes the Pharisees that Jesus is fighting with. When the Greeks came to enforce, I'm on the back page now, Antiochus' decree of idolatrous worship, they were killed in the small city of Ephraim. The patriots fled into the hills, these are the Maccabees and their followers, and began to attack the Greeks with kind of little, if you know Revolutionary War, Francis Marion, the Swamp Fox, and like midnight raids against little, you know, and doing, what's that? Yeah, guerrilla warfare. They begin, and if you've been to Israel, the hill country of Judea and the hill country of Samaria is great places to do guerrilla warfare out of. The patriots fled in the hills and began in multiple small engagements and three major battles. The Jews were victorious and fulfilled the prophecies of Micah 4, 12 to 13 and Zechariah 9, 13, 10, 8, 9. The battles would continue back and forth into the 150s until the Greeks were forced out of Israel, and one of the sons of the Maccabees, five sons, becomes head of the Jewish kingdom. And it is enlarged by his so Matthias' grandson is a guy by the name of Alexander. He dies in 78 BC, and he enlarges this Maccabean kingdom to a lot of southern Syria, most of modern Jordan, half of modern Lebanon. He actually enlarges this kingdom, and then the Romans say, ah, we're coming in. But that's going to take place a little bit later, in about 20 years after he dies. So I'm going to stop right there at 36, because now when we get to 36, to the end of the chapter, now the prophecies are going to turn to the Antichrist. So, we get to verse 36, then the king shall do according to his own will. This is no longer Antiochus Epiphanes. That is now the Antichrist. Remember how we looked at the mountains? Remember Gene's comment about the mountains? So Daniel is sitting there in 535, and he's praying about the future of his people. They've stopped building the temple. They're back in the land. And the angel comes to him, and he says, let me tell you about the future of your people. Bad times are still coming. Just because you're done with the captivity doesn't mean it's all unicorns and rainbows and lucky charms. That's not the way this is going to work out. Let me tell you about, and he gives them the Greek history. And Antiochus is the pinnacle, I would call it the Mount Evans, of that period. He is, because it's about the Jews. And he is the type of this future Antichrist. So if Daniel is here and he's looking across, he can see the valley here and the buildup of the Greek Empire and the fighting and the Seleucids and the Ptolemies. And then he sees Antiochus, and that's the pinnacle. He doesn't see the Maccabean Empire. He doesn't see Rome. He doesn't see Constantine. He doesn't see the church age. He doesn't see any of that. And the next peak he sees is the Antichrist. Is that tracking? Is that making sense? So as he looks across this, because when we get into this text, you're going to see this can't be Antiochus. The description of this guy, Antiochus never did this stuff. But when we get to Revelation 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 13, and we see the beast coming out of the sea, we're going to go, oh my goodness. When we get to Matthew 24 and 25, and we see Jesus Christ talking about this future Antichrist, we're going to go, oh, that's exactly who Daniel was talking about.